This is the Everything Financial Radio Program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you're listening in today. The Everything Financial Radio Program is brought to you by PLP Services. I've got a terrific show lined up for you today. Joining me momentarily, Dr. A. Gary Schilling. Dr. Schilling has been a Forbes columnist for more than 40 years and is also the editor and publisher of the very popular investment newsletter, Insight. We'll get his take on what's going to happen now in the markets moving ahead, given that the election cycle is over. It just seems odd, doesn't it, the last few days to be watching television, listening to the radio, and there's no political ads. The silence might actually be pretty welcome for most of us. Joining me also on today's program, Harry Dent. Harry is a multiple-time best-selling author. He's got a brand new book out he'll tell us about. And if you've got money in stocks, you're going to want to stay tuned and listen to what Harry has to say. He has got a forecast that you're not going to want to miss. He'll be joining me in segments 3 and 4 of today's program. If you're not yet a subscriber to the newsletter Portfolio Watch, I would encourage you to subscribe. You can visit the website yourportfoliowatch.com and get a free subscription. The newsletter giving you our economic commentary, our economic analysis, as well as market analysis is distributed free every Monday at 5 p.m. Again, to become a subscriber, visit the website yourportfoliowatch.com. That's your, Y-O-U-R, portfoliowatch.com. I'm very pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Dr. A. Gary Schilling. Dr. Schilling is one of the most impressive economic forecasters that I've had the pleasure of interviewing, and his newsletter, Insight, is must reading. And Gary, welcome back to the program.
Oh, my pleasure, Dennis. Glad to be back.
So, Gary, we are sitting here recording this 2 days after the election. This interview will air, actually, within a week of the election. How is the outcome, in your view, going to affect what's going on in the economy and markets, if at all?
It's kind of more of the same. If you look at the reason that Trump got elected, it's because, fundamentally, there's been no growth in purchasing power for most people in the U.S., and that's also true in Europe, for over a decade. And in the immortal words of Howard Beale in that great movie Network, they're mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. They really have basically, as a result, turned away from the mainstream politicians. They say they're not doing the job, and they've gone to the fringes. And whether that was Bernie Sanders on the far left or Trump, I guess you'd say he's on the right. But they have basically turned away. Now, these politicians make it very easy to sell easy answers. Hillary said the problem is that income polarization has moved income to the top, and her plan was to basically tax the rich and redistribute it downward. Trump is saying it's the fault of immigrants and imports, and we'll cut those off at the border, build a wall on the Mexican border, and so on and so forth. The real cause of this, in my view, is twofold. One is the unwinding of all the debt that was built up in the 1980s and 90s. You know, I've talked about this for years. I say we're in the age of deleveraging. We get slower growth as the flip side of the faster growth was the result of huge debt buildup in the 80s and 90s. The other reason is globalization, probably the most important economic development on the world scene in the last 30 years. And this has been the shifting of manufacturing, other production out of the West to China and other developing countries. And that has left a lot of people who had high-paid middle-class jobs really stranded, and a lot of them have dropped out of the labor force, or they're flipping hamburgers or working at a lot less money. So that was what really, I think, got Trump elected. Now, say, what's going to happen from here? Well, the themes that got him elected were already in place. He is advocating them. I mean, whether he figured this out, just sat down and analyzed it, or whether that was his nature, he rode that tide of discontent. And so the themes we already have in place are no doubt going to continue, and there are two that I would mention. One is protectionism. That's already here. And that's the natural result of slow growth domestically, and that's true of almost every country in the world. The idea is unload that problem on foreigners. Increase your exports, do it that way by trashing your currency, put in protectionist measures, dump your goods abroad, et cetera, et cetera. That's already there and has been growing with a weak economy for many years, and he is certainly advocating that, but nothing new. The other thing that he is advocating, which is really not new on the scene, is massive fiscal stimulus. We've been talking about this. I wrote a report in March of last year in our monthly newsletter, Insight. The title was The Next Big Thing. And the next big thing, in my view, was massive fiscal stimulus, because that was the way to get the economies of the West rolling again and out of this age of deleveraging, this slow growth period that we've had since 2009. And that has been advocated by all politicians. Both Hillary and Trump were advocating that. And, of course, now you got the central banks, the European Central Bank, the Fed, other central banks, the Bank of Japan. They're really admitting that monetary policy is impotent in terms of getting economic growth going. So they really say we've got to have fiscal stimulus. So the idea of fiscal stimulus is not new. I mean, Trump was advocating it, and I think a lot of the initial market reaction to his election was with the idea that this was going to happen. It won't happen overnight, but I think that was in the cards anyway. So I think fundamentally what was there ahead of time was really being enhanced by his election victory, but it's really not all that brand new.
Well, we are chatting today with Dr. A. Gary Schilling, and his newsletter, Insight, is, in my view, must-read. And Gary, if someone wants to learn more about your newsletter, what would you have them do?
Well, they can go to our website, www.agaryschilling.com, or if they'd like a sample copy, they can call. We have a toll-free number. It's 1-888-346-7444.
Well, I'd encourage the listeners to check it out. And Gary, we've got about 2.5 minutes left in this segment. You mentioned massive fiscal stimulus. Gary, haven't we already tried that? And is there room left on the credit card to do more of it?
Well, that's a good point. They talked about it in 2009 with that stimulus program. And of course, they talked about shovel-ready projects. Well, turned out they hadn't even made the shovels, and they probably were going to be made in China anyway. The problem is, if you look at, for example, a highway program, that's 90% financed by the federal government, but the spending is the 10%, and the actual spending is done at the state level, and there you have all the zoning restrictions and environmental rules and so on and so forth. So it would take a considerable national push to get that happen, to get through all the layers of government, but I think that's possible. But it will take time to get all that done. The other possibility there is military spending. We've talked about that in our past newsletters. And with the Republicans in control, I think they're going to point to China building these artificial islands in the South China Sea, and Russia trying to rebuild their empire, and so on and so forth. And so I think we'll see more military spending, and that can be done a lot quicker by the government. The one important thing about this is how do you finance this? Because it does mean big deficits, but that's where the Fed comes in. The Fed, other central banks, they want fiscal stimulus. They're not going to allow interest rates to run up and basically offset it. So they are going to finance it. In other words, they're going to buy the securities issued by the treasuries. It goes under the title now of helicopter money. But that's what they've done in the past. They do that in wartime. We're now in a war against slow growth, so I think we're going to see it again.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today is Dr. A. Gary Schilling. His newsletter, Insight, is must-reading. You can get a sample copy by calling 888-346-7444. I'd encourage you to do that. And we will continue our conversation with Gary when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program, brought to you by PLP Services. Glad you're listening in today. I'm going to get right back to my conversation with Dr. A. Gary Schilling, but before I do, let me remind you that if you want to go back and listen to any of the interviews that we do here on the Everything Financial Radio program with our guest experts, all you have to do is visit the website, everythingfinancialradio.com. They are all posted there for you to listen to anytime you'd like to. Again, the website, everythingfinancialradio.com. I have the distinct pleasure of chatting today with Dr. A. Gary Schilling. His newsletter, Insight, is must reading, and we're chatting a bit about what's going on in the economy and what it might mean for you and your money. And Gary, let me shift gears here a minute and talk a bit about what your forecast is for stocks. And I'm looking at your November Insight issue here, and you said the stocks remain expensive and elevated while treasuries weaken and commodities move sideways. That sounds like it creates quite a conundrum for an investor trying to figure out what to do.
Well, it does, and in the portfolios we manage, and we do manage money, we have an extraordinarily high amount of cash right now. And that's my view when what I perceive as the fundamental factors affecting the economy, financial markets, are not being reflected in what's going on currently. I want to be on the sidelines, and that's where we are. So we've had very, very heavy positions in cash. Fundamentally, though, we are long treasuries. I think yields are still going down. As I say, mentioned in the first segment, I think the Fed is going to basically buy whatever treasuries are issued to finance fiscal stimulus. I'm not worried about upward pressure on interest rates. Deflation looks still more likely than inflation, so I still like treasuries. I also think commodities are still going down. I'm on record as saying I thought we would get to $10 to $20 a barrel on oil, and I still think that's the case. And OPEC, their recent attempt to cut back production is going to be no more successful than in the past. And so I think you got lower oil and other commodity prices. And the dollar is the third area that we've emphasized. And that's really dollar's a safe haven currency. And to the extent that we do get economic growth going in this country, it does attract investment from abroad. And, you know, Trump is talking about cutting corporate and individual tax rates, a lot of things that could work in that direction. So those are the three legs on our stool. But, again, our positions in all these areas and are really at relatively low levels.
Well, and Gary, when you say that oil is going to get to $10 to $20 a barrel, that strikes me as an incredibly profitable short from the levels where we find ourselves currently.
Well, it is, and we're short oil in our portfolios right now. And the argument there is that when you're in a war here, and that's what this is, a price war. OPEC is basically they're getting tired of cutting back their own production to accommodate others. And so they basically said, and this goes back to November of 2014 when they decided not to cut production. They say, we're going to play a game of chicken. We're going to see who could take lower prices the longest. And in a price war, the chicken out price, it's not the cost of meeting budgets. It's not the cost of drilling new wells and so on. It's a marginal cost. Once their holes are drilled, the oil is flowing. And in the Permian Basin in Texas, that's a $10 to $20 a barrel, and it's even lower in the Middle East. And what's interesting is now OPEC itself is proving to be the chicken. You know, this idea that they're going to cut production, that's the last thing they wanted to do. They wanted to get somebody else to do that. But they've getting strains on their budgets to the extent that they're basically throwing in the towel. I don't think they're going to be successful in this, but at least they're giving it the good old college try.
Gary, you mentioned that it's your view the dollar will be a safe haven moving ahead, and yet when I look at what's happened over the last year, there seems to be that there is some movement away from the U.S. dollar, albeit maybe early stages of movement against the dollar. What would your comment be?
Well, in some ways it's a tough one to figure. I mean, for example, the Bank of Japan, the central bank there, they want to trash that currency. That's part of a Prime Minister Abe's goals, is to reduce the value of the yen to try to spur their economy. They've been singly unsuccessful at that because the yen has been a safe haven. But I think that's somewhat unique. And if you look at other currencies, for example, recently commodity currency, the Canadian dollar has been weakening, and I think that'll probably continue. That pretty much rides with oil prices. And the euro, that really has the problem of Brexit, the British decision to leave the European Union. Of course, the pound sterling collapsed on the basis of that. But with all the trade relationships between the UK and the continent, the euro has been weakening as well. So I think there was some earlier hesitation, but now I think we're probably on track for a considerably stronger dollar.
So basically, what you just said is the dollar is really the best choice of a bunch of bad ones. Is that fair?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, we're the tallest midget. We're the cleanest shirt in the laundry. We're the slowest falling rock, or the one I like. We're the valedictorian in summer remedial school. Whatever you want to say, the dollar, whatever's in second place, is not nearly as good.
So, Gary, based on the fact that you say stocks are expensive, would you say that we're in for a stock market correction here reasonably soon?
Probably at some point here. But if you look at major stock market declines, they're either associated with recessions or shocks. And recessions are typically precipitated when the Fed gets nervous about overheating the economy and jacks up interest rates to the point they precipitate a recession. That, I don't think, is there for a number of years. There's just too much excess supply of labor and equipment and productive capacity in the world. The other thing that precipitates it is a shock, and that, I think, is probably what's going to happen before the Fed jacks up rates enough to kill the golden goose. And what could that shock be? Well, it could be a further decline in oil prices. Interestingly enough, when oil prices go down, stocks go down. Now, you would think that that makes oil a better deal because we still import oil and makes it cheaper for us. But what overrides that is the concerns about the huge financial leverage in the oil industry. In other words, lower prices suggest financial problems. And so you could have a big shock from that. Another one is, you know, you could have a fallout from some of the actions of Trump. What happens because of protectionism in terms of China developing countries elsewhere? You know, you name it. But there are possibilities. When you have very slow growth in a world like we have now, it doesn't take an awful lot of a shock to put you into negative territory, and that's the makings of not only a weak economy but a bear market in stocks. But in meanwhile, bull markets don't die of old age. There's always some reason. Say it's a recession or a shock like we had with the dot-com collapse in the late 90s or the subprime mortgage debacle in the mid-2000s.
Well, unfortunately, the clock says, Gary, we're going to have to leave it there. If you'd like information on Gary's very fine newsletter, Insight, or get a complimentary copy, you can simply call 888-346-7444. And, Gary, pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure as usual, Dennis. Look forward to doing it again soon.
If you have not yet received your free report about how to invest in metals, actually the report is titled, Should I Buy Metals? You can go to the website, shouldibuymetals.com. shouldibuymetals.com, and request your copy of this free educational report. All you need to do is go to the website and give us your name, let us know where you'd like your report to be mailed, and we will be glad to send it to you free of charge and free of any further obligation. The report will talk about how should you buy metals if you're thinking about it. Should you buy metals? And given what's going on in the current geopolitical climate, concerns about the fact that the stock market may be in a bubble, there are a lot of investors that are thinking about turning to gold and silver to hedge against economic volatility. If that's you, let me suggest to you that you should get this free report and read it cover to cover before you make a decision. Again, the website is shouldibuymetals.com, shouldibuymetals.com, and just enter your name and address, and we will be glad to get you out your copy of this complimentary report. And again, for those of you just joining us, if you are not yet a subscriber to the Portfolio Watch newsletter, it's easy to subscribe. Just visit the website, yourportfoliowatch.com. That's your, Y-O-U-R, portfoliowatch.com. I'll be back with Harry Dent after these words.
Give me your money, just give me money.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program brought to you by PLP Services. If you're just joining us, let me remind you that we do have a free report available to you titled, Should I Buy Metals? If you would like to get the report, it's easy to remember where to go to get the report. You just go to shouldibuymetals.com to request your report titled, Should I Buy Metals? And in the report, we'll give you many different things to consider before you think about investing in gold or silver. I'd encourage you to check it out. If this is something you've been thinking about, all you need to do is go to the website, shouldibuymetals.com, enter your name and address, and we'll be glad to send you this free report without any cost or any further obligation. I am very pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial radio program, best-selling author Harry Dent. Harry is a very widely known and well-respected economic forecaster, and Harry, it's an honor to have you back on the program. Welcome.
Yeah, nice to be back, Dennis.
You know, Harry, you've got a new book out. It's titled The Sale of a Lifetime. Tell the listeners about it.
Yeah, you know, I've written many books in the past about demographic trends and how they're shaping our economy and some other important cycles. But this time I said, you know what, we just don't see bubbles. No matter how great bubbles have gotten in real estate and stocks and commodities, which are already crashing, people just don't see bubbles. So I thought, you know, this book is about, you know, bubbles, why we don't see them, why they don't correct, they crash, and why you've got to be very, very cautious right now, because we're in the late stages of a bubble that first peaked in 2000, then again in 2007, and now on totally artificial stimulus. No good fundamental trends in technology or demographics now, just artificial stimulus. This bubble is going nuts. I mean, just this whole thing around the election going down 800 to 900 points overnight and then up, you know, 300 to 400 points after that. This is the market's on crack. And this is a blow-off phase. It's a blow-off phase in real estate in many areas around the world, especially leading English-speaking cities from Manhattan to San Francisco to Singapore to Sydney, Australia to London and Miami. So I'm just warning people, look, you got to understand that if it looks like a bubble, walks like a bubble, quacks like a bubble, it's a bubble. And I show in this book without any reserve that we are in the greatest bubble, the most global in modern history, and it is going to burst, and I think it's going to burst just after this election.
Well, so the election, as we're recording this for aired in just a few days, we have now President-elect Trump. Do you think that any monetary policies will change because we now have a Republican that will be in the White House versus a Democrat?
You know, I don't think monetary policies, fiscal policies could change. But again, the thing to me about Trump, like the markets went down for 9 days in a row thinking, oh, my God, Trump has a chance of being elected and he's a wild card, to suddenly he gets elected and they're saying, oh, he's going to cause instant economic growth. I mean, this is crazy. There's not one policy he has that has any chance of being implemented anytime soon. Now, he does have a Republican Congress behind him, so that's something. But he's not going to be able to build a wall overnight or invest in infrastructures overnight or change trade policies overnight, although that's one thing that might happen quicker. The markets are just looking for a reason to go up. And the reason for this, Dennis, is the markets are on crack. The Federal Reserve and central banks around the world set interest rates at zero to negative, constant, you know, $12, $13 trillion worth of free money through quantitative easing coming into the financial institutions and the economy. There's nowhere else to go for investors. You can't get a good return on any decent bond, corporate or treasury or sovereign. And in fact, Italian bond, a country that's already declared bankrupt at 18% non-performing loans, Italian bonds have a lower rate than U.S. bonds because the ECB's been buying up those bonds and pushing them down artificially. This is a
really an artificial economy. And when rates go this low, it pushes up real estate. It pushes up stocks even more. And now I'm watching the market say, oh, Trump won. No longer is he the devil. He's like Jesus coming back, you know, and he's going to grow the economy. And I'm like, what? It doesn't make sense. Because here's the thing to watch, Dennis. Earnings for the S&P 500 and corporations have been going down now for 2 years. When have you ever seen a stock market continue to go up with earnings going down? And on top of that, since June of this year, Treasury bond rates, which means all interest rates long term, are going up. Why? Because the bond trade has gone so extreme that it's reversing. And with interest rates going up, which is a big deal in the valuation of stocks and real estate and mortgage loans and all this stuff, and earnings going down, this, the market's gone nuts. And it's going even more nuts now. So I think we may be in the last phase. And I do think stocks are going to go higher for the next several weeks, probably into early December or so. And that might be a major peak, because I'm like, why are stocks going up? You think Donald Trump's going to suddenly turn around the economy and instill a very divisive Congress and an extremely divisive country? This is not going to happen.
So we are chatting, listeners, if you're just joining us, with best-selling author Harry Dent. Harry has a brand new book out, The Sale of a Lifetime. If you try to go to Amazon to get it, you may get it, you may not. They've had a hard time keeping the book in stock because of the demand. However, for our listeners today, if you go to saleofalifetime.com, you can get a complimentary copy of the book by paying a shipping and handling charge. The website Harry has made available is saleofalifetime.com, so I'd encourage you to check that out. Harry, when we go back to talk about the book, just what are some of the characteristics of a bubble? And secondly, why do we keep making the same mistakes over and over again?
Well, you know, Dennis, first reason is we only see major bubbles in the economy once in a lifetime. The last one was in the Roaring Twenties. I mean, who is alive to tell us about that bubble and the Great Depression and debt deleveraging and bubble burst that followed? Nobody's around. People don't get it. And when a bubble is happening, when real estate's going up much faster than usual in stocks, people are getting a free lunch, and people are getting low-cost mortgages and low-cost auto loans, and companies are getting, like, low-cost buybacks to buy their own stocks with loans and mergers and acquisitions. This is a free lunch, and this is what everybody wants in life, which you never, ever get long-term. There is no free lunch. You don't get something for nothing. So when bubbles occur, number one principle, we go into to denial because we like it. It feels good. It's like a high. It's like being on a drug. Number two, when bubbles finally burst, economists and analysts always say, oh, this is a black swan. This was like a once-in-a-lifetime event that nobody could have seen coming. No, this is not true. Bubbles build exponentially and predictably, just like an orgasm, which I show in this chart from Masters and Johnson, scientific orgasm chart. Bubbles are exactly like orgasms. They go up more and more exponentially. They have a final blow-off kind of orgasmic stage, which I think we're in now, especially in real estate around the world, and then they collapse suddenly. They don't go down step by step, or they don't crash 20 or 30 or 40%. They crash 80, 90%. And so I have a whole new bubble model that says, look, you can measure a bubble, how intense it is versus other bubbles as it climbs. You can see as it's getting in the late stages what the downside potential is, because two other principles of bubbles. They crash in stocks twice as fast as they build, and the bubbles tend to go back to where the bubble started to go exponential, not from the last bear market low way back or something, when stocks started to diverge from the normal fundamental trends, like, you know, 7% growth for stocks and 3% growth for real estate, for example. So there's nothing unpredictable about this. It's that we don't want to see bubbles. When bubbles occur, all politicians, all stock analysts, all, you know, everybody, economists, denied, oh, it's not a bubble because this or that. I don't care why a bubble occurred. I don't care if it's limited supply, excessive demand, OPEC cartel. I don't care what it is. You know, a meteorite hitting the earth. It doesn't matter. It's just that when bubbles happen, they go to such extremes that they defeat themselves. It doesn't, a trigger will tend to cause the bubble to burst, but it doesn't matter. The bubble will burst. The real estate bubble in the United States, which I predicted was peaking in late 2005, and it actually peaked in February 2006, I said this bubble's gone too far. It's going to burst. And it burst before the economy slowed down, before stocks declined, anything else. It just burst from its own extreme. China's stock market bubble last year burst just from its own extremes. No major change in the economy and stuff. So you have to, this book all about how do you understand bubbles, see bubbles. If it looks like a bubble, walks like a bubble, quacks like a bubble, it's a bubble, damn it. And you need to get out of the way, especially because bubbles crash much faster than they build. So if you say, oh, okay, people like Terry are saying this could be a bubble, well, I'll wait and see when it starts to crack. Another point we make in the book, all the major stock bubbles, 1929, the tech bubble in 2000, the Nikkei bubble in 1989, and on and on and on, the China bubble recently. The first crash in the first 2 to 3 months tends to see half the crash happen right away. So if you wait to see if it's going to happen, you're going to get killed.
Well, the book, The Sale of a Lifetime, is available to our listeners for a shipping and handling charge. All you need to do is visit saleofalifetime.com. I'd encourage you to do that. And I will continue my conversation with Mr. Harry Dent when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. What a great listening choice you made this morning. You are listening to the Everything Financial Radio program brought to you by PLP Services. Glad you're listening in today. I'm going to continue my conversation in this segment with best-selling author Harry Dent. Before I do, though, let me remind you that if you are not yet a subscriber to our Portfolio Watch newsletter, you should be. And it's easy to subscribe. All you need to do is visit the website yourportfoliowatch.com. That's your, Y-O-U-R, PortfolioWatch.com. And just give us your name and email address, and every Monday at 5 p.m., we will get you that week's copy of the Portfolio Watch newsletter, in which we look at what's going on in the economy, what's going on in the markets, and what might it mean for you and your money. Again, the website, YourPortfolioWatch.com. I'm pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Harry Dent. We've been chatting with Harry about his new book, The Sale of a Lifetime. If you're just joining us, Harry is making a complimentary copy of the book available for a shipping and handling charge. You can get all details and get your complimentary copy of the book at saleofalifetime.com. And Harry, we're talking about bubbles and how to recognize bubbles. And you made a point in the last segment that bubbles tend to crash when you study them twice as fast as they build. And the second characteristic of the bubble that you mentioned is they kind of end up where they start. So let's look at U.S. stock market indices. What does that mean? Where do we end up? And how long did it take to build? How long did it take to crash, to the extent you're comfortable digging into that?
Well, you know, I'll give you two analogies. Stocks, the bubble really started at the end of 94 when we went into the great tech bubble. Now we've had three bubbles, two of them natural, one of them artificial. And to really correct the whole stock bubble, we'd have to go back to late 1994 prices, which is 3,800 on the Dow. Another chart I have shows that each bubble has taken us to higher highs in the Dow or S&P, and each crash has taken us to lower lows. Well, the next crash would have to take us to a minimum around 5,000 to 5,500 on the Dow. So we're talking a 70% crash minimum, and down the road to be as much as 80%. I mean, a lot of people may say, oh, stocks are overvalued. Maybe we'll have a 20% correction go on. No. bubbles don't crack like that, and our demographic trends, globalization trends, technology trends, everything we measure long-term are peaking now and pointing down. So this is a dangerous period. Now, real estate does not bubble as much as stocks, takes longer to correct, and only goes down to about 85% back to where the bubble started. I start the real estate bubble in the United States, and in many countries, somewhere earlier or later, around January of 2000 is when the real estate trend started to diverge from the fundamental trend for real estate to go back to January 2000 levels. And the good thing about this indicator, you can look at it regionally, locally. What was your house? What was your office worth in January 2000? That is your approximate downside potential. I'm telling you, it's 50, 40, 50, 60% from here in most areas in this country. We're going to see another real estate crash, a second one that's worse than the one we saw in 2006 to 2012 with the subprime crisis and the down and the great financial crisis. So people think, oh, real estate's okay. It's come back. No, it's not. Fundamental demand, Dennis, for real estate, one of the great things I figured out 2 or 3 years ago after watching Japan's real estate bubble peak way ahead of us, because their baby boom and their bubble peaked ahead of us, when it went down 67%, not 34% as we saw, it went down 67% and has never bounced much 25 years later. You know why? Because real estate lasts forever. And because it lasts forever, you have to not only look at the people who are going to buy new houses between age 27 and 41 in this country, increasingly, you have to look at the people who are dying or moving into nursing homes in their late 70s, early 80s, and subtract that because they're sellers. Real estate has net demand that's going to continue to slow down in the U.S. until 2039. I will be dead before real estate demand turns up again, and the same thing's already happened in Japan. Even when the next generation, the millennial generation, came along, which is substantial in Japan, not as large as ours, but much greater than most of Europe, real estate still didn't recover because there's more buyers than buyers. So, I mean, the world's going to change because of demographics. And again, in this book, we look at bubbles, but we also look at the demographic realities of the continued fast-growing emerging world outside of China, which is not growing demographically, and we look at the slowing of almost all major developed countries who are the wealthiest in the world, five times wealthier than the emerging world, and say, even when we come out of this crisis, you're going to have to invest in emerging countries like India and Southeast Asia and Mexico. You're going to have to invest in commodities, which these emerging countries both produce and export and consume the most, but most countries will not grow like they did in the 83 to 2007, what I called from the beginning in the 80s, the greatest boom in history. Demographic dividend, technologies and internet soaring, but all these trends have peaked, and we're going to see a whole different economy ahead. So again, for investors and businesses that see it coming, it's nothing but opportunity. If you don't see it coming, your business could be wiped out, your net worth could be wiped out in the next 3 to 6 years from what we're seeing. This is going to take a long time. I think in 2017, the economy is going to collapse and after this third bubble, and the Fed's going to be too slow to raise, to stimulate again, and they're going to have no credibility after their stimulus has already failed. And right now, the ECB in Europe and the Bank of Japan and the Bank of England are all backing off their bond buying program, so they're realizing negative rates and super low rates are actually hurting the banking system and the economy more than they're helping, which says to me simply, yes, Virginia, you don't get something for nothing. So this whole pushing bond yields down and zero and negative rates is going to backfire. And when it does, it's going to take down stock and real estate prices. And when those go down again, the economy is going to fail because it has nothing else, does not have demographic trends doing anything but getting more negative. Globalization, Trump and everybody in the world is saying no more globalization. We want to keep our jobs. We want to stop immigration. Globalization has peaked for the first time since World War II ended, and it's going to regress, not for years, for decades. So we got a whole different economy going forward. Again, if you protect yourself, preserve your gains from the greatest bubble in modern history, then you will have the assets and liquidity and cash to reinvest first in bonds, then in emerging country stocks, then in U.S. stocks, then in commodities, then in real estate down the road. There's going to be one buying opportunity after the next over the next 6 years in particular, and that's why we call the book The Sale of a Lifetime. The important point is, yes, this is going to be a very difficult time, but if you see it coming, who would argue against being able to buy the best businesses or best corporations or gold or stocks or real estate at 10, 20, 30 cents on the dollar, as Joseph Kennedy did in the early 1930s.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Harry Dent. His book, Sale of a Lifetime, is available by paying only a small shipping and handling charge. You can go to saleofalifetime.com and request your copy. Harry, thanks for joining us today.
Okay. Thank you again, Dennis.
Well, that's about all the time we have for this week's Everything Financial Radio program. Let me remind you as I close that if you've not yet requested your free report titled Should I Buy Metals, which talks about really everything we think you should consider before you buy gold or silver, you can get your copy of the free report by visiting the website shouldibuymetals.com. The website again is shouldibuymetals.com. And as I said, that's about all the time we have for the program this week. Hope you got something you can use. We'll be back again here next week, same time. Tune in then. Bye.